I'm Gabe Ortiz, afternoon host at WIPR. Federal funding for public radio is under serious threat. An end to that funding would make the live streams like this one more difficult to maintain. Stand up for public media and help fortify WIPR's future. Find out more and donate at WIPR.org. Thank you.
Good afternoon and welcome. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it. Today it's midday on the arts. A little later, I'll speak with Marco Merrick, the founder and director of the Community Concert Choir of Baltimore, in advance of their Carnegie Hall debut. And midday theater critic J. Wynn Russick will review the Baltimore Rock Opera Society's newest show, Lempira. But first, I'm delighted to welcome Kate Bergen, the executive director and CEO of the Walters Art Museum. This month, the Walters opened its first permanent exhibition of Latin American art. The collection includes work from more than 40 cultures from North, Central, and South America and the Caribbean. Kate Bergen began her tenure as the Walters director in late January. She had previously served in many roles at the museum, including deputy director. She succeeds Dr. Julia Alexander, who had left the museum last fall after 11 years as director. She was running an arts foundation in New York, and earlier this month, Julia Alexander passed away quite suddenly at the age of 57. So Kate Bergen, still in the early months of her tenure as director, has to contend with the grief that the Walters community and indeed the entire arts community is experiencing at the loss of such a beloved leader, colleague, and friend. And Kate Bergen joins me here in Studio A. It's good to see you.
Thank you for having me, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
And full disclosure, like you, I was a very good friend of Julia Alexander, and her passing took all of us by, it was a terrible shock. But how would you describe the mood over at the Walters? Because so many people who are still there, work very closely with Julia for a long time.
Mm. We were all shocked by Julia's sudden passing, and I think we're all processing that grief in different ways, Tom, and I think now all seeking to find ways to remember Julia, to memorialize her, and as we walk through the galleries, finding ways to remember her impact, an extraordinary impact on the Walters, Baltimore, and the entire museum field.
Yeah, she really was just universally admired and respected and loved. She was a great art historian. She knew her stuff. There's no doubt about that. But she was also very committed to the community, very committed to Baltimore outside the walls of the Walters. I mean, that's something that I think all of us will always admire and miss, too. When a person who's been at an institution for as long as Julia was, because it was, 10 plus years, she leaves an impact. And then to have that, and you guys were close, you were chatting with each other. She went off to do another thing. She was running an arts foundation in New York. But not having her as a sounding board is tough for you, I would imagine.
Julia was a great friend and was a visionary leader of the Walters Art Museum. And Tom, I love what you said about Julia's connection to Baltimore and her impact on the arts community outside the walls of the Walters, because I think that's actually what her impact inside the walls of the Walters has been as well. And Julia's, profound impact on the institution was when she arrived, realizing that it was better known internationally than it was locally, and wanting the Walters to not just be located in Baltimore, but be of Baltimore. And so everything that Julia did inside the walls of the Walters was to support the community outside of the Walters, from programming to working with contemporary artists. And her legacy, we will continue.
Yeah. You're no stranger to the Walters. You worked there for a while very closely with Julia. You did some big projects there. You were the deputy director at one point, but you don't have a traditional background as a museum director. I mean, Julia was Dr. Julia. She had a PhD in art history, and she specialized in stuff, and she had an art history background. You have a business background.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, when you were named as the director of the Walters, you were working for a wonderful company here in Baltimore called Catalyte, which does workforce training. So how does your background, which is outside of the art history universe, how do you think that's going to help and inform what you're going to do at the Walters as the director?
Yeah, well, you're exactly right that I have a different background from other museum leaders. And you know, what has been a defining part of my personal life and my career is a deep, deep love of museums and the power of art. And so, you know, I grew up in Sacramento, California. My mom was a doctor, and she loved art history. And so I grew up going to museums with her and my sister. But it wasn't until after college, Tom, that I realized that I wanted to be a museum director when I grew up. And I had the opportunity to work in business with cultural organizations across the country. And what I saw was the ways in which actually a deep set of business skills and executive leadership skills were essential to help organizations thrive and actually realize their missions. And so, as you say, I got my MBA. I worked in consulting for a long time, helping organizations realize their missions. And that brought me to the Walters in 2016, where I had a great run working closely with Julia and the whole team.
Give us a few examples of some of the projects you worked on at the Walters, you know, beginning in 2016.
Absolutely. So I got to work with so many teams across the museum. Several that I'm really proud of. First is actually building the whole visitor experience team and making it so that when you walk into the Walters, there's something called the Walters Welcome when you come in, and that friendly embrace and trying to get you into, you know, situate you and get you into visit the museum. Another thing that I'm very proud of that is actually from my business experience and background is helping us build the muscle internally to understand and listen to our community and to our audiences at the Walters. And so what I've learned, again, through my business experience is how important it is to understand who you're serving, understand who you want to serve, and to listen to their feedback. And so over the course of my tenure, we actually built an internal team, an evaluation and audience impact team that is bringing on community advisory groups, doing audience research that help us shape installations like Latin American art and Arte Latino Americano.
And it's interesting for me to hear that you say that you wanted to be a museum director since you were a little kid. I mean, this is something that you really had your eye on, yet you went to Harvard Business School, you went to Harvard College as an undergraduate, and you did not have the traditional training. I mean, did you ever think about being an art history major? Did that ever occur to you?
So, you know, it didn't, Tom, actually, because the things that have driven me throughout my career is this belief in the power of arts, but also loving to work with teams and helping teams to thrive and the business questions that are entailed. And so I thought that was my highest and best, you know, impact and use was actually building this from a different vantage point.
Yeah, and of course, it is a business. Boy, I mean, you know, you've got a big budget to deal with. Yeah. You've got a lot of employees. You've got, you know, this role in the community.
That's right.
You know, when you think about the changing role, the evolving role of museums, museums are different places than they used to be. It used to be, you know, kind of like uptight libraries. You know, you went and you made sure you kept your mouth shut and you looked at things and nodded your head, and the experience of being in a museum, certainly at the Walters or even at the BMA or at the American Visionary Art Museum, the other places we have here in town, very different than it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and certainly different than it was when your mom was taking you to museums.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right.
How do you see that evolving with a place like the Walters?
Well, I think you're exactly right that museums are shifting at a pace that is faster than they have ever have before. And where museums used to be a place where we just preserved and presented art, that's changing. As I've been on in the first 3 months, I've been having conversations, Tom, with as many people as I can, community members, visitors, artists, every single department, volunteers, to really understand what is core to people about the Walters, but what are the biggest opportunities for how we can evolve to become that next generation of museum. And what I'm hearing that's core, that is also an opportunity, is it's our free and open access to the community, but that we also have an opportunity to establish the Walters as a true third space and a hub in Mount Vernon by inviting our community to use the Walters differently. So instead of just coming for an installation or an exhibition once or twice a year, by being free, we can invite local college students in to do their homework on our sculpture court or in our conservancy. We can invite people in to have 30 minutes, have a cup of coffee and see their favorite work, or family members to come down for an hour of art making and a dip into the Chamber of Wonders. I think the future of museums is this center of the community role.
Yeah, it's a gathering place, a physical gathering place.
It is, yeah. And it is one of the few remaining true gathering places where we bring people together across the community for dialogue, for gathering, for growth, for the unexpected. And that's why museums matter and will continue to matter in the future.
Kate Bergen is the Executive Director and CEO of the Walters Art Museum. If you have a question or comment for Kate, 410-662-8780 or email midday@wipr.org. So one of the things that folks in your position grapple with all the time is relevance and you might even say resonance with the community. When you have a collection like exists at the Walters Art Museum, and as you know, you mentioned, Julia used to talk about this all the time, about how it's known and revered internationally in ways that it might not be known and revered locally. For a long time before I got into the radio racket, I ran an arts organization, a musical one, you know, the Baltimore Choral Arts Society, and to try to make classical choral music, you know, resonant with people was a tricky business. I mean, it was difficult to do. With a collection like the Walters, which is a lot of really old art, you know, the Walters family collected old stuff. You've now started to add some new stuff, but is the fact that so much of it at the wall, so much of the collection happens to be antique or old, you know, classic in the traditional sense. Does that present a particular challenge when it comes to saying to the community, hey, look, this is stuff that you really should take a look at. This is stuff you should enjoy. This is stuff that is meaningful to you in the year 2025?
That's a great question. So I actually think that the fact that the Walters has, you know, 36,000 objects across 7,000 years of history from across the globe creates even more opportunity for relevance for our community today, because the experience of walking through the Walters galleries and experiencing art from across the world and across time, it sparks curiosity, it sparks the sense of discovery, and it broadens how we see ourselves and how we see the world and its possibilities. And so for me, walking through the galleries, it sparks questions about the nature of power, the nature of government, the nature of history itself, the nature of beauty. And for our young audiences, what I love about the Walters collection is it's so accessible. It's so inviting. So from our Latin American art to ancient Egypt to our Chamber of Wonders, you know, we have this case of animal effigies.
The Chamber of Wonders, it sounds very Harry Potterish.
It is very Harry Potterish. But our young audiences, it's such an accessible way for them to experience a museum and to start to wonder, what is this? How was this made? And so, Tom, to your question of relevance, I actually think it's the very nature of the Walters collection that makes it even more relevant than potentially other collections.
And as you say, when you make it inviting for people to just go and hang out, because it doesn't cost admission to get in. So you can go and hang out for 10 minutes or for 3 hours. I mean, it just doesn't matter. Whereas before, if you had to pay, you know, $15 to get in there, you're going to walk around and see everything and try to, you know, get your money's worth. It's a place you can go. You can do your homework. You can do family stuff. You can do different things, including just grabbing a cup of coffee and maybe, you know, walking into one of the galleries instead of, you know, all of them. That's key, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Because you're right downtown. You're, you know, at Center Street, right down there in the middle of town, right next to the library and, you know, other institutions, the Basilica. I mean, there are some really wonderful places right in that area of Mount Vernon. When it comes to your participation, the number of people coming through the door, what are those numbers looking like? Are they better, worse, the same than, you know, pre-COVID, post-COVID? How's your attendance?
So our attendance is a little bit down relative to where it was before COVID, exactly as the entire museum field is experiencing. And I think what we've seen, you know, over the last 15 years is a little bit of a decline in arts engagement overall, with the rise of, you know, couch entertainment and with the rise of our cell phones. And that's why I think it's so important to create these accessible moments of connection with our audiences and with our visitors, to say, come in as you are, exactly as you were saying, Tom. And that's what being free allows us to do.
Talk a little bit about this new exhibit. It's a permanent exhibition. This is stuff that's been in the collection or is now in the collection. It's Latin American art, or Arte Latinoamericano. This is like 200 pieces or something. This is a big show.
It is, as you say, it's 200 pieces across 4,000 years and representing 40 cultures. It is a permanent installation that is now in the museum's original Palazzo building. And when visitors come in, they can see objects presented by geographic area, diving into location, materials, the natural world. What is incredible, and I think actually, Tom, makes this the single biggest evolution of the Walters over the last several decades, is that this collection area has never been on view before. And it is now, with this moment, the permanent collection is now finally on view. And with this, it is the largest display of Latin American art in the region now at the Walters Art Museum.
Yeah, that's terrific. And you don't think of the Walters as the place for that kind of stuff, do you? I mean, heretofore. And this has been in the works now. You all have been working on this for how many years?
We've been working on it for 7 years, but actually our founder collected the first object from ancient Americas, a Peruvian chalice, in 1897. Mm. So depending on your time frame of history, Tom, it's been in the works for a long time.
Yeah, you got Mayan art there. Yes. You have burial urns and, you know, the way that the Mayans constructed their objects and their stuff is fascinating to learn about. And as you say, 4,000 years. Yes. I mean, that's a lot of years.
Yes. I think two of the areas that we're seeing, you know, people really gravitate towards. We have dozens of jade and gold ornaments from Colombia and Central America, and then this just magical case of animal effigies, a llama effigy that is becoming the unofficial mascot of the installation, a lobster effigy. But what has been extraordinary, Tom, in the first week that the installation has been open is seeing the joy that our visitors are experiencing having this collection on view. And when you walk into the installation, there's a huge map of Latin America. And I've seen countless visitors come in, point to where they or their families are from, take photos of the map, take photos of objects. And it is such a powerful testament to the importance of this art, these powerful stories, being on view and celebrating the cultural expressions and heritage of Latin America.
Yeah, and especially if you're from that region of the world, I mean, it's a great thing to identify with the beauty that comes from the culture that you're from. Yeah, that's great. Let me ask you a business question, since you know a lot about business as well as the art. You were one of many institutions across the country to have government funding, federal government funding, cut that you were counting on, total about $70,000. What happened? When did you find out about it? And how did you cope?
So the museum had received a grant from the Institute of Museum and Library Services for our Latin American Arte Latino Americano project. And about a month before the project opened, before the installation opened, we received a cancellation, like so many libraries, like so many museums across the country. But Tom, I will share with you that there was never a moment that we hesitated, that we even thought about postponing or pushing the installation, because it is so important to our work. In total, the grant was about $250,000. We had already received $180,000. So it was about 6% or $70,000 of the project that was cut. In the way that the world is a little bit of a roller coaster right now, just 2 days ago, we learned that the grant had been reinstated. And then with also a caution that it could be canceled again. So as we say in your field, Tom, this is an unfolding story.
Right.
Stay tuned.
Breaking news. Right. It's difficult to plan under those circumstances. I mean, it used to be you applied for a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts. You do it a year in advance. You tell them the project you want to do. It goes through a vetting, process that's peer reviewed. So the people who are looking at your grant are people in your field. And then it gets approved or denied, and you know one way or the other. But now you don't know. I mean, the president has called for the elimination of that program, the elimination of the National Endowment for the Arts, the elimination of the National Endowment for the Humanities. He wants to get rid of CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and NPR and PBS. And he cites all sorts of reasons, bias, etc. How will you plan? I mean, how does the staff of a place like the Walters Art Museum move forward? I mean, are you just basically going to say, well, maybe government funding shouldn't be part of our plans in the future? Or how do you cope with that from the business side?
Well, from the business side, the federal grants, as you say, IMLS, NEA, NEH, have been an important source of support, but private philanthropy has always been and will remain the largest source of support for the Walters Art Museum. So although it is impactful, Tom, that is not going to be the primary source of support for the Walters. And in terms of how we plan, you know, we continue to be guided by the museum's core values in terms of creating meaningful programs for our diverse audiences, expanding the narratives that we're sharing, just like with Arte Latino Americano, and our free and open access. And those are the principles that are going to continue to guide our planning. We won't be driven by these external forces.
We have an email from a listener, Christopher, who said there used to be a clear demarcation to the kind of art that went into each of Baltimore's major museums. And now with all of them pursuing contemporary work, often from the same group of artists, it feels like their identities are becoming more similar. Is that intentional, or does the Walters seek to have an identity that is distinct from the BMA, the Baltimore Museum of Art, or AVAM, the American Visionary Art Museum? You know, this is something that it used to be, well, the Walters has this kind of art, the BMA has that kind of art, AVAM has, you know, another kind of art. Is that so important anymore?
So the Walters core collection remains a historic collection over 7,000 years, and that will remain the core identity of the Walters and telling stories from this extraordinary collection from around the globe. As the caller notes, you know, we have, over the last decade, made an intentional effort to expand our representation of contemporary and local artists, because having that dynamic conversation between world-class local Baltimore-based artists and our historic objects, it brings new meaning to the artwork, and it also shows the way in which historic art continues to inspire our audiences of today. But that will be an important but still relatively smaller part of our focus, as opposed to the great Baltimore Museum of Art.
We have a kudos and a high five for you from Kristen. Says, I love your vision of the Walters. You are the right leader in these challenging times. And Jill writes that she was privileged to be in the leadership class of 2021 with you. And she's also very excited about your appointment as the director of the Walters. So thanks so much for coming in and break a leg moving forward. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Kate Bergen is the Andrea B. and John H. Laporte Director of the Walters Art Museum. There's more Midday in just a moment. Up next, the Community Concert Choir of Baltimore is headed to New York's Carnegie Hall for a performance next month. Marco Merrick is the choir's founder and director. He joins me after a quick break. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday on 88.1 WYPR.